All right. Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to Linux in the Ham Shack. We are back again. Yes, back again, and it's been less than a month. Less than a month, and we are back again. I am KB5JBV Richard, coming to you from the card top of the card table in Heartland, Texas. For those of y'all who don't know where that is, get your map out and look. We are situated directly dead center in between the four points of Mesquite, Terrell, Crandall, and Forney. Just about right dead square in the middle. All righty, so we're going to be going kind of quick. I apologize for the echo. This particular room where the studio is going to be is a little on the Spartan side. We finally got some of the echo killed out because we got some stuff on the walls in the other place, but it will take us a little time. Now, I've run my head too long. I know that Russ is starting to doze, so let me introduce to you that debonair man about town, Russ, K5TUX. Say hello to everybody, Russ.
Good evening, everybody. This is Russ, K5TUX. Okay, anyway. Yeah, this is Russ, K5TUX, broadcasting from between the peaks in the pine forests of north central Arkansas. And we are doing our second podcast in a row. We did one last week. We're doing one this week. One just got released, episode number 61. Episode number 62 will be coming out shortly, and this is episode number 63. So welcome, everybody, our veterans and new listeners alike. And I guess I'm going to send it on back to Heartland, Texas, which, for those who are diligent and paying attention, will realize is not where Richard used to be.
No.
That's true, but he has a new life and a new commitment to things going on, and Linux in the Ham Shack is going strong. So, back to you.
I was asked to leave. My visa expired. See, I grew up in the city right next to Bald Springs, and you actually had to have a passport to get into Bald Springs at that time. So, anyway, and, you know, I called Russ Devin there a while ago. I don't think I said you're Euro trash.
Why did I imply that you did?
Good evening.
Oh, right. Sorry, I was getting my fab on.
Anyway, so we're out here in the country with the bugs and critters. I had the Terminex man give me a ration because he wanted to tell me about Black Widow spiders, and I was in the middle of trying to put the studio together so we could record this evening. And he would not leave me alone. Terminex man probably doesn't understand that I am not the homeowner, and I will put bullets in his butt. So, with that, let's go ahead and move on. It's been a long, long week. We've got the Winlink running pretty much, kind of, sort of. That's the problem with our new location. We're going to have to battle over an antenna. I'll get one up, whether they like it or not. Everything else, but otherwise everybody is happy and fat and sassy, and we've actually had three real meals for dinner over the last 3 days. So I guess we'll get on with the program. First up on the program in under announcements, we have the ambassador program needs your help. We'll be issuing posters of Russ in a patriotic style hat, giving you the finger, saying that the Linux Ambassador Program needs your help. Tell them all about the Ambassador Program, Russ.
The Ambassador Program is where we get our listeners to help us promote Linux in the Ham Shack and open source software by going to open source conferences, Linux conferences, and potentially ham fests in our stead. And what we do is provide you with a booth set up, give you things to give away like distribution CDs and business cards, which promote the podcast and so on and so forth. You go to the shows, hype Linux in the Ham Shack and open source and all of those good things. We give you free swag and everybody's happy. So what we need is for people to volunteer to be able to go to ham fests and Linux fests in your particular area. So if you are willing to do this, please go to the ambassador page. That is, click on the ambassador link at the lhspodcast.info page, or send an email to ambassadors@lhspodcast.info indicating your willingness to be a part of the program, and we will get you set up for any events that happen in your area. We really need your help with this program. We would love to be able to go to every Linux Fest and Ham Fest in the country or around the world, but of course we can't. So we're enlisting our listeners to help us out with this. Yeah, I wouldn't call it a problem, but help us out with our lack of ability to be everywhere at once. Please let us know if you're interested in the program. And that's our call to our listeners. So please get in touch. We would love to hear from you. And we would love for you to be a Linux in the Ham Shack ambassador. So Richard's kind of new to the program. We do have one volunteer already in the Colorado Springs area, but we would like a lot more. So what else do you have to say about that?
I'm worried right now. I wish they'd get that damn sheep out of here. Anyway.
Yeah, because I'm worried what you might do to it.
Remind me after we finish the show to tell you something my son told me about. Anyway, so the ambassador program, it's a great idea. It'll help us out a great deal because it's kind of difficult traveling to all these things that we need to travel to. Luckily, with the changing situation around here, I might be able to actually get back to going to some of the ham fests and stuff. So, y'all get in touch with Russ if you can help us out, and we'll see what we can do with that. So, let's see, what else?
Tell me that you're able to go to this stuff when I reveal that I can't? What's with you?
I'm talking about the close ones.
Well,
I can't go yet. I'm anticipating a better life.
Hey, I mean, relatively speaking, Ohio's close. I mean, it's closer than, say,
I don't have any relatives in Ohio.
Well, it doesn't really matter. It's closer than, you know.
You said relatively speaking.
Never mind. Okay, you were about to say something else. Go right ahead.
Yes, but it completely slipped my mind. No, actually, to tell you the truth, if you really want to be serious about it, Texarkana and Austin are the same distance from here, or just about. And so is Shreveport.
Well, if there are any ham fests in the Texarkana or Shreveport area, we'd be happy to have you go to them.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. Anyway, this will be sometime in the future.
Well, aren't you going to the Oklahoma Super Spammerama Hammerama Dama thingy?
You're talking about the Texoma Hammerama.
Yeah, that's the one.
Only if I have enough cash.
Oh, okay.
We will see. We will see. The girls are diligently packing away as we speak, so we'll see what happens. We got like 8 bus loads of crap to go on eBay. So, moving on to the next announcement. If you listened to the previous episode, you got to hear my long and heartfelt farewell to my old friend, Resonant Frequency, the Amateur Radio Podcast. For those of y'all who skipped over that episode, you might want to go back and listen to it. For those of you who skipped over it and really don't want to go back and listen to it, we'll give it to you in a short version. The short version is that the production is ended on Resonant Frequency, the Amateur Radio Podcast. The website will be going away pretty soon. I'm catching a little crap off the guys at the Internet Archive, but we'll get that fixed. We've found somebody that will host the website, which will probably be pretty much static, but we're going to get the episodes linked to the website so you guys have access to them. My suggestion is y'all keep listening. When we get it happening, it'll be good to go. We'll tell everybody where to go, take a look at it and everything else, and life will be lovely.
Well, I won't say it's a spoiler or anything like that, and I won't say that it will come to pass, but I don't know if you noticed, but when the original members, i.e. Charles and Rothgar of the Linux Mint podcast, said they were going to go away and hand it off to someone else, or they couldn't handle the podcast anymore, that production of the Linux Mint podcast went up by about 3,000%. So you never know what could happen.
So you're saying somebody going to take my damn show and run with it?
Well, I'm not saying that, but I'm saying there may be content that you don't even know about.
Well, that's okay, because we'll put it on the website.
Well, no one's going to steal your show. Resonant Frequency will always be yours. But I've seen some of the comments that came after your announcement, and there are folks who don't want it to die, so maybe it won't.
That, That is true. That is true. And who knows? I never said it was completely dead. What I said was that I can't continue with it at this time. So we'll see what happens in the future. The future is, let's see.
The future is so bright, I have to wear shades.
No, one of my favorite quotes. Here's to the undiscovered country, the future. Star Trek.
Yes.
Yeah, buddy.
This is one of my favorite. And Timbuk 3, who, for people who don't recognize the song mentioned.
I was not talking about no song.
Well, I was.
Nice words about Rich. Wait a minute. They're chugging along in the chat room. Let me see what these people are talking about. Ooh. Yeah, I plan on going back and listening to that. For those of y'all that don't listen to it, you probably need to go check out the ICQ podcast. I think we've got a link listed to them on the website. Apparently, they got my email about us shutting the doors, and according to Bill, they said something nice about me. Now, considering how things were a couple years ago, okie dokie.
And I'd be willing to bet they still don't know that I'm alive.
Oh, I bet they do. Of course, they use Linux. They just not overly Linux. So anyway, let us see. Can we figure something else out? Andy, KB1OIQ. OIQ. Went over there to download his new ham radio distribution that we talked about the last time. And that's why one of the reasons I hate U-verse. Because that bad boy fired up and it chugged on along at about 250K coming down the line for about 3 minutes. And then the speed started dropping and dropping and dropping and dropping. And then it quit with an hour left.
That's why you use WGET with the -C option.
Well, I don't know where to point it. Or I'd just grab my FileZilla and went and got it.
Well, if you right-click on a download link, it always gives you the URL, and you just plug it into WGET.
Really?
Yep.
I'll have to give that a try.
Unless it's one of those stupid-ass JavaScript things, in which case they can bite me.
WGET with a C.
Yes, the -C option is for continue.
Uh-huh.
So that if, for some reason, your U-verse basically fails on you, three quarters of the way through the download, you can issue that command again, and it will start the download from the last byte that it got, and it will assemble your completed download into a singular file, and you will be able to do with it what you wanted to.
That's pretty good stuff. I don't know why somebody doesn't put that in a podcast so people can download it.
Well, I think it's been done now.
Oh, yeah, this is a... Oh. That damn sheep's back.
This is one of those audio podcasts. This is one of those audio things that goes out over the internet and people listen to it and get good information. Things WGET-C.
Yeah. I might just have to start listening to this show. Yeah, buddy. Oh, that's not the most of my U-verse woes. We've fallen out of announcements now, people.
Yeah.
We're currently talking about U-verse woes.
Right. We've moved on to bitching. So go right ahead.
And I hate Windows 7 while I'm at it, because I can't get Windows 7 to connect to the wireless network in this house.
WPA or WEP?
Yeah.
No, that was an either or question, not a yes.
WPA personal.
Pre-shared key?
Yes.
And it doesn't work.
And it don't work. Not on the Windows 7. Now, the other side of it is the Linux machines have no problem with the wireless network.
Well, you know what I would call that?
Yeah, but I have to have that laptop that way.
Oh, what were you thinking I was going to call it?
Get rid of Windows.
Well, sort of. I was going to call it a feature, but,
A feature?
Yeah, it's a feature. If Windows doesn't connect to your network and Linux does, to me, that's a feature.
A Windows feature?
Well, just a plain old feature.
It might be a feature article in the newspaper when I shoot the damn router box with a shotgun. There won't be no shooting guns in this house. Right. I've been told.
Now that's a feature.
I've been told by the queen of the house.
So are you done bitching about U-verse, or do you have more?
Let's see. What else is wrong with U-verse? It's slow. My Windows laptop won't connect. Well, Brenda's Windows laptop won't connect. And I got these stupid little wall plugs that you plug in for your network. They plug into the electric box, the plug, which means you lose a plug because it's got a damn network thing sticking out of it.
Well, here's the thing. We gave up AT&T in general about 2 months ago, and I had to pay almost $300 for the privilege of leaving AT&T, and I was happy to do it.
Well, I understand that, but it's not my house. Oh, yes, and my hub won't work.
You still have a hub? They're called switches nowadays.
I have a hub.
You have a hub.
It's a, let me look.
You mean it actually shares bandwidth among its ports? Like it's a true hub?
It's an EN108 Netgear hub.
Wow.
Figure that one out.
Well, if it's a true hub, you know what you should do with it.
Pitch it in the street.
Well, no, you know that thing you were saying about guns?
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, well, I figured out that I had a switch hooked up to one of the computers over at the old house when I was crawling around under the desk today. So I'm going to bring that switch over here and plug it in and see if that works. Right now, I've got two Linux boxes running on USB wireless dongles. I have the machine we run the Skype on plugged into the wall socket thingy. Brenda's is plugged into the wall socket thingy. And the Windows 7 laptop won't work. Well, it will work on the internet if I climb up under there and unplug the Skype box and plug the cable in, but it won't work on wireless. My laptop, which has got Ubuntu on it, is over there in the corner, and I haven't attempted to get it hooked up yet.
Well, here's what I have to say all about that. I can sum it up in just a few words, and those words are, we are still able to record Linux in the Ham Shack, so all is good.
I was diligent about getting it going. Now, we've got all the announcements out. We bitched about some stuff and griped about some stuff, and I've chased that damn sheep out of here, and the girls are home, and the door's shut, and everything. So, I'm mad. I don't even know how long we've been going, and I didn't start the Audacity, so I hope my audio is good.
Your audio is good so far, but you probably should start it here at this point.
Unless you have any objections, I think we should probably take a short break.
Oh, I could definitely use a break, and I'm sure our listeners could too. So we'll be back in a few minutes and come back on the other side. I'm going to throw on some good music in the meantime, and then we have some stuff to talk about.
Well, the bottle keeps me from the therapist's couch. You don't really want to know what that's all about. My friends all hate to see me alone, but I like myself and I tell myself so. I soar on the wind when I play my guitar, sing all the songs when I drive in the car. I live in the moment as much as I can. Simple as it gets for a complicated man. There are those who think I live a life of sin. There are those who think that my party never ends. There are those who are sure that I'm chasing youth. They don't realize I've caught the truth. Love is the only gift we can give. We all need to learn to live and to live. I know where I'm at and I know who I am. Simple as it gets for a complicated man. Questions I can't answer. pile them under? I don't know. Do I need someone to save me? I've got cards I don't want to show. Will I kick myself when the morning comes? My heart beats in my head like a pounding drum. Always a day away from starting new. At least 20 pounds from being cool. But I'm going the distance, standing my ground, scrambling up to keep from sliding down. That's good as I got for a backup plan. Simple as it gets for a complicated man. Ask me questions I can't answer. File them under, I don't know. Do I need someone to save me? I've got cards I don't want to show. Will I kick myself when the morning comes? My heart beats in my head like a pounding drum. Always a day away from starting new. At least 20 pounds from being cool. But I'm going the distance, standing my ground, scrambling up to keep from sliding down. That's good as I've got for a backup plan. Simple as it gets for a complicated man.
Okay, here we go. We let me tell you, I'm glad Russ is in charge of the music, because from listening to the other show, y'all know I have no taste. So
being a fan of the blues does not mean you don't have any taste.
I could have put the classical music on them, or it could have been Brad 24-hour Brad Sucks All the Time. 367 Brad Sucks.
Brad Sucks is good. I will give you that. But he does get old after a while.
He's trying to get another album together. He's not good as he used to be. I get updates when he releases a demo. I get updates on that so I can listen to him.
You know what is pretty good? There's a guy who's a singular guy who releases music under the band name Mad Mav, MADMAV.
Trent Reznor?
No, it's not Trent Reznor.
Oh.
He's very good, considering that it's just him with a digital audio workstation creating some decent heavy metal music. He's been
I got the echo tonight. I can do it.
Wait. Let me get my thing here. Hold on. I got to do my thing.
Oh. Yeah!
Crap. Okay, here we go.
Yeah! Bless you. You need to see a doctor about that.
There we go. I'm back. What was I saying?
I don't know.
Oh, Mad Mav. Yeah, it's worth listening. He's been featured on at least one of our earlier podcasts. I don't remember.
Yeah?
Yep.
Not turning the right knob, am I?
Oh, do you see in the chat room, KB3CDA says that Leo is now W6TWT?
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. Well, you know what?
He's always been a tit.
Well, I'm sure he would like to refer to TWT as twit, W6 twit. I, for one, am going to refer to it as twat, W6 twat. So,
Leo the twat.
That's exactly right.
Hey.
Nice echo.
I can't find it.
You got an echo there.
Let's try this one. Ooh, that's kind of warm. Actually. I'm looking for this one.
I think you've grown a munchkin.
Me and my twin.
Yeah.
Baby munchkin man.
Are you using that Alesis that I sold you?
Yes.
Excellent.
I don't get to play with the effects much because I don't normally plug my guitars into it. However, this is an announcement for the vocally impaired.
You're not going to keep echo the whole time, are you?
No, I'm going to find what I'm looking for in a minute. We need to quit screwing around so that we don't end up losing who's in the chat room. Before Russ gets too techie on y'all, because he got some techie stuff he wants to talk about, let me go ahead and tell y'all that on the last episode, which hadn't come out at the moment, but may in the future come out, we were talking about getting packet or AX25 up and running over the air on Ubuntu. And I want y'all to know that I took all the equipment down, transported it, set it back up, or at least plugged in the computer, because I don't have a on-the-air side running right now. Brought it back up. It's checking into the servers. It's doing just like it's supposed to. Now, when we're able to catch a little break where I can climb up on the ladder, well, okay, when I can get some tranquilizers, then climb up on the ladder. We're going to try and sneak an antenna up in the air because we got code restrictions around here and get that going. So we'll keep y'all posted on how that's coming out. So, Russ, my man, tell us about the new and improved, fantastic, super terrific Linux Kernel 3.
Yes, Linux Kernel has just recently gone to version 3.0. We were, if I remember correctly, at 2.6.39, I believe was the last version of the 2.6 kernel, and Linus decided that we needed to stop using the 2.6 train and go to 3.0. So my recent versions, my upgrades of Linux Mint and Debian, have downloaded and installed the 3.0.0 kernel. The reason I bring this up is because there has been a huge advance in the kernel architecture, and I thought that everybody should know about it in order to make sure that everybody is aware that we are now and in the future going to be on the Linux 3.0 kernel. And here is the big advancement that we have made in Linux. Now, you can go Google this on the web, and there's all sorts of information out there about it. But I just want everybody to be aware, the thing that has changed that has made the most dramatic impact in the Linux world is that the 2 has changed to a 3, and the 6 is now a 0. So there you go. Those are the major advances in the 3.0 kernel. So everybody's now up to date, and I guess we can move on to other things.
Well, you know, it's been 2.6 for a long time. Long time.
That's very true. It has.
I've got 2.6 kernels that are older than my dogs. Some of my children, my car, and that block of moldy cheese in the refrigerator. So I'm glad that they finally decided to break with convention. You know what the hell I'm saying, people. They made a clean break of it. We're going to go to 3, and we're not going to worry about the past. All 2s with points behind them are pointy 2s, if that makes any sense at all.
In truth, and in all seriousness, there are some major upgrades to the 3.0 kernel. Support for Xen DOM 0, support for the ButterFS file system, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There are some real advancements in the 3.0 kernel, but for the most part, it's not going to mean anything to anybody except for a lot of the modules you built on the 2.6 train are going to break. So that's pretty much it, and I don't really want to spend a whole lot of time on the 3.0 kernel. So anyway, that's that.
And it's broken module time. Broken module time at Linux in Ham Shack.
Peanut butter jelly broken kernel time. Oh, yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry, y'all. I've been trying to clear my throat out and stuff. I've tried gargling glass like this one guy I was listening to. Anyway. Okay. So now we've done that. And next it says your first license. What should you expect? I feel that there's a mystery brewing here. Maybe you can enlighten me on what that means. Christmas.
Okay, the real mystery here is that I have put this in there because I wanted you to say a few words instead of me, because I knew, since I put most of the information in the Etherpad, that I would be doing most of the talking. But since you are a much better storyteller, I would like to sort of go back to basics for a little bit, maybe a 5-minute session, where Richard, KB5JBV, will go back to his roots and tell our listeners what it was like to get his first lesson, or not his first lesson, his first license in amateur radio.
I was born a poor black child back down in Mississippi, where it echoed all time. Echo all time. And I'm sorry, go ahead, Russ.
Okay, so basically I just wanted to, and I will interject from here too, but maybe tell the story of what led up to getting your first license, including what studying and training you got, and what the process was for going to your volunteer examiners and taking the testing and stuff like that. Nothing real in-depth, but people might be interested what the process is for actually getting your first amateur radio license. And I thought, like I said, since you are the better storyteller, that maybe you could get us from point A to point B.
He wants me to tell stories now.
That's right.
He used to get mad because I wouldn't shut up. Get to talking about radios and his eyes glaze over. Tongue hangs out. That's why we don't do video anymore. He didn't want y'all watching him drool. My case is not typical, though, and I will tell y'all, the thing that made me decide to get my amateur radio license was when I was 3 or 4 years old, not older than that, probably about 5 years old, the very first radio that I had that was mine was a Radio Shack crystal radio kit that me and my father built.
Well, before you go too deep into this story, let me just bring you back to what I was hoping for here. This is not about how you got into radio as a whole. This is when you finally decided that you wanted to get your amateur radio license, what was the process that you went through?
Well, the process is all part of the bigger picture, but we can jump ahead a few years to not adolescent Richard anymore.
Yeah, let's like move forward from the womb a little bit and come up to, you know, maybe your teen years.
Well, actually, I got my license. I was licensed when I was 28 years old. 28 years old, and I was coming from that service that we don't talk about. And because my father always drug me into hobbies that he would get into, that's how I learned to play golf. That's how I got certified as a scuba diver, that kind of stuff. He was desperately, because he had always wanted his amateur radio license. So he got me involved. And what he told me was, we were talking about it, and I'd borrowed some antenna books from him to improve my other station. And he said, I tell you what, if you take that test and pass it, and then you get privileged to take the next test and pass it and get the privileges, I'll give you this shiny new handheld. It was beautiful. It was an ICOM 209RH, and it shone with the glory of the sun. It was beautiful. It was like Excalibur coming up out of the lake in the hand of the lady. So I decided I was going to do it. All right. Back in the last century, we had to take an entry-level code test. That way anymore, but we'll get to it.
How did you study for your code test?
In my case, I wanted to pass that code test so bad, and I was having such a hard time grasping it. I went with the tapes. I went and got my dad's tapes, Gordon West, WB6NOA's code test, code tapes. And I was having such a hard time grasping the code that I started sitting in my car, because I had a job where I could sit in my car with a battery operated handheld cassette player, listen to those code tapes with a spiral notebook, writing down the characters for months. Not only was I doing that, but I was wearing a Walkman. I had one of those cassette playing Walkman things. When I went to bed at night, I would start it playing. when I got up the next day, I'd put it on my head and listen to it. And I chipped away at that code for 3 months. I also got to the point that when I was driving down the road, I'd look at the street signs and spell them to myself in code when I'd go past them. I would use the letters that I could remember and spell the street signs out to me. I had a desire. I wanted that code test. But we don't do that anymore. So when I went to take my code test, because there was some people in my mentor group, my Elmer group, it wasn't just my dad, there was other people in it that were V's and had been known to give shady testing sessions. The day I went to take my code test, my entry-level exam, because at that time, and I don't know if you still can or not, because I haven't checked in a while, at that time, all you had to have was two, I think it was general class operators, verify that you took the code test and passed it, and then you could send that stuff into the VEC and get the license pushed through. Because of some of the people that were in my Elmer group, two others in my Elmer group came over and sat in the living room of my father's couch, father's house, while I sat in the kitchen and took my code test. And when the code test was finished, they took it in there and showed it to the people that had come to stand vigil. And I had missed three characters from somebody who could not grasp five words a minute Morse code. And there was a little, very simple written test that went with that. But I already knew most of that stuff because of my experiences with other radio equipment. So a week later, my dad said, "Hey, come on over here and we'll ride over to the University of Texas in Arlington because there is a testing session over there and you can take your technician class test," which is the test I had to pass to be able to get that shiny radio. So I drove from my house to his house. He and I and the technician class book got in the car together. And I studied for the 40 minutes it took to drive from his house to the University of Texas. And I did not pass that test with such extreme ease as I did the first test, but the technician class test, I did pass it. And when we got back to his house, he presented me with that radio, which I ran as my mobile, my base, and my handy-talkie for 2 years after that. Now, that's the way it was back in the last century. Now we have a new and improved amateur radio service. So what do you need to expect? Well, first of all, you're going to have to get the materials. If you have an Elmer available, that is way better. It's a whole lot better if you have somebody that has a little experience, that doesn't mind showing you the ropes and stuff. But I've gotten emails over the years from guys that are like, "Hey, I'm out here in the middle of nowhere. There's no large city. There's no amateur radio clubs. I haven't even seen a ham radio antenna anywhere within 100 miles of my home. How am I supposed to do this?" First of all, decide where you're going to go take your test. Once you've decided where you're going to go take your test, you'll need to find out, because the two major VECs in the country, and there's some smaller ones in isolated areas, but the two major ones are the ARRL and W5YI. Those are the two that you're probably going to end up taking a test at one of their test sessions designed by them. Question pools are tests designed by them. The question pool is agreed upon by all the VECs before it can be okayed by the FCC. Anyway, and they both are a little bit different. Once you've decided which one you're going to, then you get materials that are geared for that kind of test session. If it's an ARRL test session, then you want to go ahead and get your books from the league. There's no better place to get them. They need to say ARRL on them with a diamond on them. There is no better place. They are expensive. They're pricey. But it's good material. And the ARRL books, for the most part, are, they'll teach you the theory as you go through them. Now, they have actual licensing guides, and they have some books that are used for licensing that are a little bit more, like, what was it? Hello Radio. I don't remember what it was. I've never used it. I've given given classes and never used it. On the W5YI end, you got people like Gordon West, WB6NOA, putting out materials, which are geared kind of more that direction. So now you know what you're going to be studying towards. You can do like some do and go out and memorize the question pool. That works for some people, but that still puts you in the hobby with a license without a lot of knowledge unless you've been fooling with radios for years. Once you have studied, then you have to decide when you're going to get down there. Now, here's where it gets kind of tricky. And a lot of, I tell you what, there's a big chunk of people that fail their very first amateur radio test. And it's because they go in and they're scared. They freeze up. Most people don't take tests very well. Some people do. I'm one of those people that I used to be terrified when I'd go take tests. But now it's gotten to the point that I've taken so many for one thing or another over the years that I just really don't pay attention. I go in, I sit down, I look at the information, I take the test. Now, inside the VE session, they're going to want some identification. They're going to want a copy of your certificate of completion for a lower level license or your previous license if you already have them. You know, they're going to ask you a few questions. They might get you to fill out some paperwork, but for the most part, you're going to go in and take these tests. Now, I don't know if it's changed over the years. It's been a long time since I've given a test. Used to, W5YI was multiple choice, and ARRL was not. That may have changed over the years. Like I said, it's been a long time since I've been involved in testing session. When things get squared away here, I may try again. But you're going to get that piece of paper down in front of you. They're going to give you a sheet of paper. If you're going for a license that's higher than just a technician class, they're going to allow you a calculator, but they're going to check it to make sure that it doesn't have any pre-programmed formulas or anything in it. And you're going to sit there and take the test, just like being in school. You're going to finish the test. They're going to grade it for you. They're going to let you know that night if you passed or not. And it's nothing to get too terribly excited about, because you either pass or you don't pass. If you don't pass, you go back, you study, you go back the next month and take the test again. I know people that have had to take one level of test or other multiple times. Even the ones that I didn't pass with flying colors, I always passed. You know, that's the thing. My advanced test, the place that I took the test was at a place called Tucker's over in Garland, Texas. And the group giving the tests out there was later shut down by the FCC because they were selling licenses. I took my test. I passed it. There wasn't anything shady about it, but I didn't know that these guys were doing that. However, that kind of stuff does happen. And I know a few people here locally, and they know I know. That's the sweet part. That bought their licenses. Hard to believe, but it does happen. Anyway, so you've taken your test, you passed it, life is good. You can pitch that book in the trash or give it to somebody else who's trying to get themselves studied up for a test. Now what? Okay, we're not going to go too far because I've talked about handhelds and stuff like that and getting on air first thing and everything on in other places, not just resonant frequency, but I think I talked about it on ham radio, amateur radio Q&A when it was still on there and some other stuff. What's going to happen is, whereas we used to have to wait 6, 8, 10 weeks to get our license back in the mail, they file all that stuff electronically now. And as soon as your call sign shows up in the call book, you're on the air. I will say this, though. Good friend of mine, one of the ex section managers in this area, former section managers in this area, named Roy Raby, 85X something. I don't even talk to him on the radio. When I talk to him, I talk to him on the phone. He told me one time that while he was still section manager, that some of the league statistics said 90% of the people that get their license never get on the air. And consequently, those people don't renew their licenses when it comes time. And they don't do it because they're afraid. They have mic fright. They can't secure equipment, whatever. Once you get that license, you are valuable. You're important. Among the other things, the fun aspects of the hobby, you're needed for emergency communications to help get the message through. So don't let that license slip away and be careful with it. Take care of it. That's the biggest thing that these old timers that won't talk to anybody anymore were worried about, is that people wouldn't respect the license that they got without having to work really hard for it. Kind of like what I was discussing with the code. They think that it's easier to get in now so people won't take as good a care, so they won't follow the rules as well. Prove them wrong. So, go out there, take your test, try and remain calm. It's not like you have to fight that code test anymore. I've sat right next to my friend L.H. Marshall, who's a silent key now. He and I have sat there with the headphones, giving code tests, and people just, I mean, freaking out over it. You don't ever worry about that. Go study the book. Jim Haney, former president of the ARRL, local boy here. In fact, he and I used to have fun playing with our call signs because they were so close. He told me that he looked at the technician class test, at the time, he said codeless technician technician test. And he admitted to me that he couldn't pass it. He could not pass that test. President of the ARRL, because the hobby's changed so much. So with that, I feel that Russ is probably falling asleep. We've probably gone long enough to run up on another break. Y'all go ahead and listen to some music. And I'm going to see if I can get him awake. We'll be right back.
One, two.
Oh, wait.
One, two, one. One, two, one, two. If you like, you count it. Feel like I'm living a dream since I got up today. Packed up my troubles and I put them away. Got a bounce in my step and I'm feeling free. So if you're coming around to bring me down, you better let me be. Don't be harsh in my mellow, don't be putting me on, don't be pushing my buttons, don't string me along, don't be jamming my brakes, I'm an easygoing fellow. We all make mistakes, don't be harsh in my mellow. When I say my prayers, I thank God I'm alive. And for family and friends I have in my life. Got a smile on my face, there's not a cloud in the sky. So if you're coming bad news or singing the blues, you better pass me by. Don't be harsh in my mellow, don't be putting me on, don't be pushing my buttons, don't string me along, don't be jamming my brakes, I'm an easygoing fellow. We all make mistakes, watching my mellow. I look at my woman, she gives me a grin. She says she is liking that mood that I'm in. You see, it's contagious, so let the good times roll. So if you feel impressed or you're getting stressed, maybe it's time to let go. Don't be harsh in my mellow, don't be putting me on, don't be pushing my buttons, don't string me along. Don't be jamming my brakes, I'm an easygoing fellow. We all make mistakes. Don't be harsh in my mellow, don't be harsh in my mellow, don't be putting me on, don't be pushing my buttons, don't string me along. Don't be jamming my brakes, I'm an easygoing fellow. We all make mistakes, but don't be harsh in my mellow, don't be harsh in my mellow, don't be putting me on, don't be pushing my buttons, don't string me along.
Folks, I'm not going to say it this time. So Russ is Russ has been revisiting Open Hatch. We talked about Open Hatch a little bit a few episodes back, and now that since I put y'all to sleep in the last segment, I'm gonna let him put y'all to sleep.
Okay, a few episodes ago, we were sent an email about a project, an open source project called Open Hatch, and at that time, neither Richard nor I had really a chance to look at OpenHatch to find out what it was about. We knew that it had something to do with promoting open source collaboration in the sense of finding developers and bug fixers and stuff like that, but we really didn't know much else about it. So I decided that since I had some spare time late this afternoon, that I would check out OpenHatch myself and see what it was all about. What it seems to do, or what it seems to be attempting to do, is aggregate a bunch of information together so that people who are interested in contributing to the open source community have a place to go, a simple web interface where they can find out how they can become involved in open source. Now, that's whether they want to become involved in open source as a developer, as a bug fixer, as a document writer, or any of the other things that are necessary in order to produce open source software. What OpenHatch is attempting to do is become a repository where you can find out all of the things that are going on in open source, all of the projects that need help, and it's a place where you can set yourself up a profile, let the community know what kind of things you're interested in doing, what kind of skills you have, and it helps pair you with open source projects that need the kind of help you can provide, and also lets you browse around and see if there's anything you want to participate in. When you first go to openhatch.org, you can basically sign up to the website, and it will allow you to have access to some resources which will pair you up with open source projects that you might be interested in. One of the easiest ways to do this is using the concept of an open ID. Now, what this usually is a URL reference to an account that you might have either with a particular service, for example, WordPress or LiveJournal, or OpenID, or what was the other major one that I was thinking of here? Launchpad, the Ubuntu service, if you have an account with any of those things, WordPress, LiveJournal, Launchpad, et cetera, you already have an OpenID. What you can do for OpenHatch is log into OpenHatch using your existing OpenID. In other words, you can use a URL that includes your WordPress account or your Launchpad account or something like that. In other words, if your WordPress account is, say, your callsign.wordpress.com, then you can use that to log into OpenID. If you don't happen to have an OpenID, then you can create one. If you go to the openhatch.org website and click on the, login, it will give you several places, including myid.net, openid.org, and Verizon, and several others, where you can actually create an OpenID. Once you've done this, you can actually use your OpenID to have access to anything that will authenticate you using an OpenID. So if you, say, join OpenHatch, then you can use that OpenID, and say someday in the future you decide to join Launchpad, then you can use that same OpenID and it will authenticate you properly. And this way you can keep a single username, so to speak. It's actually an OpenID, but a single OpenID for all of your web application presence. And there's one way in which a lot of people might recognize this without even knowing it, and that's with the WordPress Gravatars. If you've ever logged into WordPress and uploaded your picture, you know that if you go to any WordPress site, even if it's not hosted at WordPress.com, and you leave a comment, then it will find your OpenID Gravatar, and you'll have an image there. Well, that's using the concept of OpenID. Using that concept, you can log into OpenHatch and create yourself an account. Once you've done that, the idea is that OpenHatch tries to pair you with projects you might be interested in. And the way it does that is you basically tag yourself. You set up your profile saying, well, I'm interested in PHP and Python or Haskell or Lisp or things like that, that you're interested in development or documentation or any number of other things. And then you put in details on what kind of projects you might be interested in participating in. Then it gives you search options in which you can say, well, I'm interested in what kind of Python projects are needing help right now, and it will point you in the right direction. One of the other things that OpenHatch does is aggregate a bunch of bug trackers. So if you're interested in hammering out the bugs of a particular project, it will have direct access to those bug trackers, like the GNOME project, for one, has incorporated its bug tracker into OpenHatch. So you can go to openhatch.org and look for the GNOME project and find out what bugs are open in the GNOME bug tracker. And if you're interested in trying to squash any of those bugs, you can get to the bug tracker and attempt to contribute to the GNOME project using OpenHatch. OpenHatch will allow you to see what bugs need to be squashed in any number of open source projects, as well as what coding needs to be done for a bunch of projects and what documentation needs to be written for any number of projects as well. And you can find those all in one repository, which is openhatch.org. So that's basically what it's set up and designed to do. It basically makes your interaction with the open source community easier and a sort of one-stop shop for all of the things that you might be interested in doing. One of the other things you can do with openhatch.org is aggregate your own project. So let's say you have a project you've started at SourceForge, or you're interested in making an application that does a particular thing. Then once you have that product page set up, and you have a bug tracker installed and all the things you need in order to get participation in your open source project, then you can register it with the openhatch.org project, and it will combine it with all of the users of openhatch.org, and those people who are interested in the things that you tag it with will be able to find your project and help you out with it if they're interested. Now, when I signed up today, I saw that there were almost 5,000 users registered with the openhatch.org project. They're all geolocated, so you can find people who are of like mind in your geographical area and those people who are not in your area who have similar interests. You can also find ways to contact them and interact with other people in the open source community. So I found that this is actually a pretty interesting resource for anyone who would like to contribute to some open source project. And even if you don't know what exactly you're interested in contributing to, the OpenHatch project can help you figure out what you might be interested in and allow you to connect with those projects and the people who develop them. And you can be a contributor in the open source community. Even though I didn't really know what openhatch.org was when it was first suggested and didn't really seem like a project that necessarily needed discovering, I found that it could be a very useful tool, and I might actually browse it myself to see if there's anything interesting out there that I might be able to contribute to, because I wouldn't mind having my name out there as a developer of an open source project. It sounds pretty interesting. So, did I adequately explain that, or do you have anything else to contribute?
I know nothing about OpenHatch. You have to remember, I'm like a finger-poking kind of guy. If something broke, I poke my finger in it, and if it don't work after that, then I go on the next thing.
Okay, but do you know what OpenHatch is after listening to what I said, or were you just zoned out?
No, I was listening. Okay. I pay attention. I can even cipher and do my numbers and stuff.
What's 1 plus 1?
6.
All right.
I only say 6 because it sounds like that other thing. 1 and 1 is 11.
And I see
it wrong. It's 11.
That's true. 1 and 1 is 11.
That's right.
Yep.
2 and 4 is 24.
Bill reminds us in the chat room that we discussed originally OpenHatch in episode number 59. So actually it didn't go too long before we picked it up again. I'm glad about that.
Well, there you go. Sometimes I think when we come back to a subject, it tends to be, tends to have been so long that the folks may not remember.
I'm not sure that I remembered.
I remember we talked about it.
Yeah, I remember we talked about it too.
Okay.
Okay, that's about it, all I had for that. So what's next on the list here?
So you say there's we got that taken care of, and OpenHatch, y'all go check it out. The only thing that's going to keep all this really good, yummy Linux goodness going on is if everybody jumps in and contributes. I didn't even discover that I was an open source advocate till a week or two ago.
Really? What was the revelation?
I read something that said that if you somebody that promotes something, that you advocate.
Well,
then I'm all on board with the Linux thing because I hate Windows 7.
Well, there you go. So you're definitely an advocate.
I'm all on board. And I can even use a command line sometimes. Anyway, so you said there's some development going on, some new developments in the SVX-Link situation.
Well,
all of that.
There's no developments in SVX Link that I'm aware of. The development is that I actually got it to work properly. I want to say that there's nothing much I can go into in real details about this, but I was having some problems with SVX Link getting it to work. And for those people who are interested in a truly native Linux Echo Link client, SVX Link is probably the way you want to go. But I want to say that I downloaded the SVX Link version 11.05. And I went through the instructions. When I tried to do the build on it, it blew up in my face. However, Google was kind enough to show me where the problem was, and I don't have it here in front of me. But if it blows up in your face and you get a specific error about missing include files, you can go to Google and enter in the error, and you will get a page that says, well, you have to go in and fix this one particular file. Make a minor change to one of the lines, and then it will build properly. And then if you do the make install thing that it suggests, you will get SVX Link up and working. And that's exactly what happened for me. Even though it blew up once in my face, I was able to fix that one file, get it to build, and then you have to go in and make the SVX Link configuration files. You have to tweak them a little bit. There is some documentation about how to configure SVX Link to work with your setup. It's not entirely intuitive, but if you mess around with it a little bit, you'll figure it out. We're all smart people here. I know we are, so you'll get it.
Speak for yourself.
Okay, well, Richard won't get it, but everybody else will. And then once you do that, if you run SVX Link from a terminal anyway, I haven't tried running it from a shortcut. I haven't built a shortcut for it yet. But if you run it from the command line, I've had SVX Link powering my 2-meter rig on a local frequency, 146.225 here in my area, for many, many moons. And it will show up in the list of available Echolink nodes, and it will handle traffic and read and process DTMF tones and do all of the thing that an Echolink server is supposed to do. And of course, SVX Link also contains the Qtel client, so you can access it via your computer as well. So I would like to say that even though it's not the neatest project and it's not packaged currently for Debian or any other distribution that I'm aware of, if you want a truly Linux native Echolink client, then go ahead and do a Google search for SVX Link, download 11.05 and give it a try. It should work for you, and you know, once you get it up and running, it works really well, and you will be Windows-free running Echolink. So that's about all I had to say about that.
All righty. Yeah, that's something that I want to play with at some point in the future, but I'm really going to have to figure out what I can get away with around here. But y'all go over and take a look at it. These guys up late at night. They've been at a day job all day. They're sitting there in the dark with Xena running over on the TV and a hot pocket in the hand, and they're trying to program this stuff up. If we got to work with it a little bit, that's the price we pay for freedom. That's right. Freedom.
Freedom.
And freedom.
Yes. You can find SVX Link at svxlink.sourceforge.net, and that link and the link to the installation instructions, which are off of that URL, will be included in the show notes. So give it a try.
Heavy on the dumb in my case. Freedom. So we got all that covered. We're coming to the end of the thing. We need to run through some feedback because we've been remiss, and we need to get that on out. I notice that the feedback is not a flowing in. It needs to flow on in, y'all. Flow it.
Well, the episodes haven't exactly been flowing on out. So now that we're back on the track and getting things out there, I think we'll get some more feedback. But yes, please send us your feedback. We'll get to that here in a few minutes. But we do have some things we need to tell you about.
Okay, tell me.
No, the feedback. You can read
the feedback.
Yeah, the feedback.
Well, then tell us about the donation from Oscar A. No Call.
Well, I don't think I have to now because you just did.
Oh, we got a donation from Oscar A.
Yes, no call. There was no call sign associated with the donation, but thanks very much, Oscar, for your donation. We really, really appreciate it. And we would like to ask that if anybody else can submit a donation, that you please do. We have a new donation link on the website, and if you give us permission to do so, we will have your donation, well, not the amount anyway, but the fact that you did donate it, put up on a wall of fame on our website saying that you donated to the Linux and the Ham Shack podcast. So please do. If you have, you know, this is worth the price, I think, of a cup of coffee or two. So even if you have only $2 to give, we would really appreciate it.
And remember that all donations are gratefully received. Wait a minute, I've heard that before.
Yeah, and not only are they well-received, they are also well-spent. We use them to pay for server fees, to improve the show, to get hardware where necessary, to provide bandwidth for streaming, et cetera, et cetera. Unfortunately, all of this stuff that we have to do to make the show is not free, so any help we get is much appreciated and is less money that comes out of Richard and I's pocket.
Like I said, we will be graciously happy and everything else. Y'all send those donations in, help us keep the doors open. I'm still too close to it. Oh my God. Anyway, we gratefully receive any donations and we put them right back into the podcast, and we will be happy to let everybody know that you sent some in, long as it's not a dead animal or bodily fluids.
I would like to say regarding the SVX link stuff that I just talked about, that I was inspired to finish off getting it working from an email by Rick, K9 Alpha Oscar, Kilo 9 Alpha Oscar, who sort of gave me instructions on how to do it and made me want to get it up and running. So I'm not going to go ahead and read his email, but I want to thank Rick for the push and getting me going in that direction.
So you got an email from California. N6PAZ, what's that all about?
Well, let me dig that up and then we can talk about it. N6PAZ.
Oh. We are woefully unprepared to be internet personalities.
That's true.
Both of us.
I don't see that one. Why did I put it in there if I don't have it? Oh, there it is.
Well, did you find it?
I did find it. Okay, we got a comment on the website from N6PAZ, which said, quite simply, saw you guys at Dayton Hamvention 2011. Cool website. It's now in my bookmarks. 7.3s, N6 Papa Alpha Zulu.
Well, so, you just take that bad boy bookmark and you put it on Twitter and Identica and Facebook and you spread it on around and put up some posters in your hometown and put it on the side of your car and write it on the side of your chicken with a pastel marker and you spread the word. Spread the word. I'm sorry, Russ. Go ahead.
No, that's absolutely fine. And by the way, I'm going to have to go ahead and retract what I said earlier about the fact that Oscar, who sent us a donation, didn't have a call sign, because apparently Oscar is N6PAZ. There we go.
He didn't put it on the donation slip.
No, he didn't put it on the donation, but he did put it in his email. So thank you very much, Oscar, for your email and for subscribing to our podcast and for sending in a donation. That's a triple whammy.
And they are not tax deductible, but they sure are helpful.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
And they might actually be tax deductible in the future. We have a corporation set up and we are looking for tax exempt status. And if we get 501c3, then your donations to Linux in the Ham Shack will be tax deductible. And we will let you know if and when that happens.
Don't make me resign.
Make you resign?
Yeah. I don't belong to Mesquite Club anymore because it went 501c3.
Oh, well, you'll be fine. We won't kick you out.
Wow.
All right. Yeah. So what's next?
Well, BB sent us an email before he went to bed. He'd have to wait for the next show, I think.
Yeah.
All right. So where we was? Oh, yes. F8ARR has been polling the internet. And tell us what he found, Russ.
Well, what he found was on his website, and I just had it up and now I lost it, but let me get back to it here. Here we go. At his website, f8arr.org. Yeah. Phonetically, that's Foxtrot8AlphaRomeoRomeo.org. He took. Yeah. Back on July 2nd, he took a poll, and that poll was, what distribution is used on your shack's computers? He had 262 respondents to that poll, and here's what he found. He found that 23% of his respondents use Linux in the Ham Shack, 3% used Macintoshes, 1% used FreeBSD, and if I do my math correctly, I believe that means 73% used Microsoft. Now, what's interesting about that, however, is that 23%, or let's call it 24%, that used either BSD or Linux, which is pretty cool. And what's even cooler is F8ARR said, Linux in the Ham Shack? Not for you yet? Well, one PC out of four, not so bad. And also, have a look here. And there's a link from his website to Linux in the Ham Shack.
Hey, look, that's us.
That's us. That's right. So
that's us.
For those people who apparently responded that Linux was in their ham shack, he pointed everyone to our website. So we want to send out a big thank you to F8ARR for his poll, for the information he provided, and for sending everybody our way. We really appreciate it.
We know that they're definitely using Linux in France.
That's right.
So I take back most of the stuff I ever said about the French people.
I don't know what you've said about the French people, but I really don't care.
Yeah, you've heard it.
Well, I know, but I'm not going to admit to it.
I take back the bad stuff. And I leave the stuff about the hot gals and the Statue of Liberty in there. Anyway. All right. So now we know. And I wonder how broad his reach is. His website is in English. So I would imagine he has quite a few folks coming that direction.
Yep.
How many respondents? 262.
Yep.
Holy cow. Maybe we should try something like that.
Maybe we should.
So enough of playing with that. An email from N1EA.
Yes, we did have an email from David, N1 Echo Alpha, and his email reads thusly. Hello, Russ. I don't know if your MP3 feed for Linux in the Ham Shack from Jonathan Nedu from Frostbite. Wait a minute.
Nedu.
From Jonathan Nedu from Frostbite. He got the name of... Okay, wow. That sentence doesn't make any sense, but I'm going to read it as it was written. I don't know if your MP3 feed for Linux in the Ham Shack from Jonathan Nedu from Frostbite Systems, he got the name of the Vinix website incorrect. Now we use www.vinixproject.org. We use the latest and greatest Orca and Speech Dispatcher and other speech system programs and libraries so that our visually impaired users have the best possible speech. We have lots of nice GUI and CLI programs for general use and also for ham radio. One of my favorites is TLF, the left foot, available for Debian and Ubuntu and other repositories. Vinix has its own PPA repo for updated Orca and other speech systems. We also have picked our programs so that most of the programs are accessible. Some aren't, but our audience is not just totally blind, but also visually impaired. People who can see, but not all that okay. 7-3 from David J. Ring Jr., November 1, Echo Alpha. So I want to thank David for sending along that little bit of errata about the information we got from Jonathan Nedu about Vinix and the Vinix project. So if anybody's interested and happens to be visually impaired or blind and needs assistance with using Linux, whether in the ham shack or just for general use, check out the Vinix project. And thanks, David, for the information.
Yes, thank you very much. We really thank you very much. I've been lucky enough to know a handful of sight impaired ham radio operators, and they're all really, really good people on top of being exceptional radio operators. So any information we can get, and we're really interested in getting information that will help these sight impaired and even the hearing impaired hams further their participation in the hobby. And thank you very much for sending that information in. We will for sure get it out in this podcast, and somehow or other, we might even get it wrote up and put on the website. Thank you. Okay, the next one was a Google alert for something that showed up on Ham Radio Nation.
No, this wasn't on Ham Radio Nation. This was, yes, it was, actually. It was on Ham Radio Nation, and also the original site was www.amigaz.org, amigaz.org, which is the website of MZ Studios, brainchild apparently of, I'm not sure who, but this was a post written by KC2UHB. Is that the right one?
KB2MOB. Goes by Moby G. And there's a comment in it that says, I've got a great name because his first name and my first name are the same. But go ahead.
Okay, what was the call sign? KB2MOB?
KB2 Mike Oscar Bravo.
Right, Kilo Bravo 2 Mike Oscar Bravo. Now, we will it's a fairly lengthy URL, so we will have it in the show notes, and I'm not going to read this entire article, but suffice it to say that there is a very glowing review of Linux in the Ham Shack on this particular website, and we are really appreciative of that, and I have to say I was glowing all over myself when I read it. So thank you very much, KB2MOB. We like all the publicity we can get, especially the good kind. They say glowing, it really doesn't matter, glowing. But they say it really doesn't matter, but I'd prefer the good kind anyway.
Glowing, that's what he calls it. Sounds like bodily fluids to me.
You call it what you want. I'm going to say glowing.
Well, there you go. Actually, this Google alert came through. Looks like it came from Ham Radio Nation. I looked into it a little bit. We went ahead and got the website because that particular article has scrolled off of the front page over there at Ham Radio Nation now. And, yes, go over to the AMZ Studios at www.amigas.org. AMIGAZ. You ought to be able to hunt it down. Or the easy way is check out the show notes because Bill will have it there.
I want to read this one little bit, even though I'm not going to read the whole thing, but I'm going
to
read this one.
You got me excited too, so read the whole damn thing if you want to.
No, I'm not going to read the whole damn thing. People can go read it themselves. Just click on the link. But here's one thing that sounded particularly good. They don't seem to have a regular set schedule for new episodes that I could see, which is wrong, by the way. I will say that we do come out every other week, and if anyone has seen the show notes, or not the show notes, but at least the announcement for the last episode, you will see that we will be coming out every other week again. So we're back to every other week. But anyway, but I'm sure it's a lot like my life, where you have to take care of things like family and work and such, which is why it seems like I can never get an episode of Amiga Roundtable out the door. But what they do have up is fun and entertaining, as well as informative. They offer a few different ways to interact with the show and different formats to download the show, as well as streaming via an Icecast server to listen to music and shows when they are live recording a show. And there's lots more where that goes. Thanks once again. We rarely get as much kind praise as we did in this particular episode, and I am completely flattered. That's all I have to say.
The whole thing's got me excited. I mean, that article, fantastic. It's nice to actually have somebody write something like this about this show. I've seen articles like this about the other show, and it's nice to know that these are out there. I'm sure there are more out there than just this one, but I really appreciate it. Sure enough, and Bill even got a message. He said that they need to send all their hate mail to Bill.
I think we've done a bad thing.
I'm sorry?
We've done a bad thing.
What's that?
Sending all our hate mail to Bill. He didn't ask for that. He didn't sign up for that.
All right, everybody, we've had about as much as this one as we can stand. Yes, we are going to try and get back on a regular schedule. I hope by the next go round, I have an actual desk in here instead of a piece of cardboard with some poles underneath it. If you need to get a hold of me, yes, by the way, any of you that still have the Seabridge.net address for me, lose it. All mail for me is coming through Gmail at this time. So if you want to get a hold of me, please contact me at kb5jbv@gmail.com. kb5jbv@gmail.com. Or go look on the usual suspects, Twitter, Identica, Facebook, bunches and bunches of social networks. If you go in there and type in KB5JBV because nobody else is crazy enough to use that for a sign in, you're liable to find me. Send me your complaints, your praise, any hate mail. I'm good for all of it at this point because life is really looking up, really looking up. So I'm going to let Russ give you all the particulars, and I'll be back in a minute.
Okay, I'm going to try and do this as quickly as possible. You can contact me at k5tux@lhspodcast.info or info@lhspodcast.info if you want to send something to Richard and I together at the same time. I am J.R. Woodman on most of the social networks out there, including Twitter, Identica, Foursquare, Facebook, etc., etc., etc. I'm also K5TUX at 73s.org. If you want to contact the show, send us an email, leave us a comment on any of the posts over there at lhspodcast.info. You can even leave us voicemail at 417-200-4811, option number 3. And we will put you on the air unless you request that we don't put you on the air, in which case we'll respect your privacy. We may make fun of you, but we'll still respect your privacy. Anyway, I think that's about it for me up here between the peaks and the pine forests of north central Arkansas. This is K5TUX. You've been listening to episode number 63 of Linux in the Ham Shack. We'll see you in a couple of weeks, but I'm going to send it back down to Richard in Heartland, Texas. And he's going
to
say...
we're going to have to call it something else, I think.
Well, you can call it something else, but go ahead and take us to the end.
Join us next time when we find out what the disposition of the sheep is. Anyway, thank you for joining us this time, folks. From on top of the card table, deep in the beautiful and scenic hills of Heartland, Texas, this is KB5JBV, and we'll see y'all next time.